You're listening to Underground History, a collaboration between Jefferson Public Radio and the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, or SULA. I'm your host, Chelsea Rose, and each episode we take a deep dive into little-known aspects of history in our region and beyond. Today we are talking about the Great Beyond, and I am thrilled to welcome back to the show Rosie Grant to talk with us about her new book, To Die For, a cookbook of gravestone recipes. Rosie, thanks so much for joining us again.
It is so good to be back.
Yeah. So I just wanted to remind our listeners how this all started. So can you quickly take us through your ghostly archives and show us how you went from viral TikTok account to this beautiful recipe book? Because this tome clearly reflects years of sleuthing and recipe testing. And most importantly, which really comes through, is relationship building. So I was wondering if you could kind of just talk us, you know, bird's eye view of this project over time.
Yeah, absolutely. So I got started with this project at the beginning of the pandemic. I was interning at a cemetery and I was in grad school to be a librarian and archivist. And I came across my first gravestone recipe, which is the cookie recipe of a woman named Naomi Odessa Miller Dawson, buried in Brooklyn, New York. And I had never seen a recipe on a gravestone before. And here I was working in a cemetery. And so I tried her cookie recipe. I posted it on TikTok and things kind of exploded from there. I got so many messages and questions about Naomi, about what people would put on their gravestone, about recipes that they make of lost loved ones when they miss their deceased loved one. And so it really just changed my whole worldview on how we connect with someone we've lost through food. And so while I was learning about Naomi, I learned about a woman named Kay who had a fudge recipe and a woman named Maxine with a cookie recipe. They were like my first big three of trying gravestone recipes. And now a few years later, I'm at 50 gravestone recipes. I've traveled all over the country, all over North America, trying to learn more about each person behind the gravestones. I've called with their families. We've done hours of interviews. And so, yeah, that is the book that we have today, or I should say the book that's coming out in October.
Yeah. And have you found the one in Oregon yet? I've heard rumors, but I haven't been able to track it down.
Me either. I have like a wish list of like, once I learn more and there's like rumors and I'm going down trails. I mean, honestly, it's a lot of like cold calling historical societies and different like cemetery groups, even just some individual cemeteries. One day we will have this recipe and I'm so excited.
Oh gosh. Well, listeners, start sleuthing too. So hopefully we can put our army on it. So what you just described kind of really is reflected in the book, where it pulls the reader into your journey of food and death. You don't just cook with the dead, but you're really contextualizing and humanizing these folks as individuals and as part of this special collective of sharing recipes from beyond the grave. So did you have that intention of really being mindful and respectful and not just, you know, kind of exploiting these stories as you went? Like, what was your North Star throughout this project, I guess?
That's a great question. I would say my North Star was based on a community archives model. And so I was in grad school for archiving, but really inspired by in community archives, it's basically anything can be a community archive of it's like a collection of people with some sort of shared interest. It could be based on your background or location or anything that just connects a series of individuals. And so with community archives, you need the option to opt in to the families who are part of this person and this shared interest of preserving a loved one's recipe. So as I reached out to all the different families, it was making sure that they knew that they didn't have to participate if they didn't want to. And in some cases, some people were like, you know, this is our loved one's recipe. We're still grieving. Like, this is more meant for us, which is like, of course, like that's mm-hmm. how it should be. And then in some cases also, like there's no timeline on community archives. I could have a deadline, but they don't have deadlines. And so that was a really important thing of like some of the families, it took maybe 3 years of first when I reached out to them and saying, hey, I'm interested in this project and I'm interested in your loved one's recipe. Could I include them? And they would say, let me think about it. And every like 6 months or so, I would check back in to be like, hey, how are you feeling? And they'd be like, you know, still thinking about it. And then eventually it would turn into like, well, let's hop on a phone call. And then from the phone call, it would usually turn into some sort of an interview and an oral history. Mm-hmm. And then from there, with each of the recipes and each of the stories, all of the families reviewed it. That was a really important part. So like, you know, things needed to be changed, or if it was a story that's not how they told the story, that was really important to take into account. And then I would ultimately say another North Star was the very first time I met with one of the families. So I met with Naomi, who is buried in Brooklyn, and her family drove up to Brooklyn, met me in the cemetery. And then we cooked together. And I think that changed everything for me. That was when I was like, oh, this is like the recipe is just the surface. Like there's so many more stories about food and legacy and like funny stories of them in the kitchen and just things throughout their life. And so that became really important for the full project to talk to everybody.
Yeah. And, you know, headstones are at the same time, like so personal and private for families, like a physical space for grief, but they're also public. And so that is such an interesting juxtaposition where it's like anybody walking through a cemetery can see something, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's for them. So I guess building trust and kind of getting pulled into those family circles is probably how people like decided they wanted to share those stories with you.
Yeah, it's exactly that. Because like, I mean, this is the beautiful thing about cemeteries. It's these public memorials to a person. In some cases, it feels like the only surface place that a person's name might be mentioned, that people would read their name still in modern times, that it's, you know, their record in history is through the cemetery. But I think exactly that of it is such a personal thing. And these weren't old gravestones. These are all like the oldest one technically is from the 70s, but the majority of them are from the mid 2000s. And so some of these people have kids and grandkids and great grandkids. And so, you know, there's very living people who are still remembering this person and still making their dishes. And so that was why, I mean, the project wouldn't have existed without the families and their storytelling and even just permission to include the person in the book.
Yeah. You're listening to Underground History on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm your host, Chelsea Rose. And today we are talking with Rosie Grant about her new book, To Die For. Okay. So what you just kind of outlined about this project, this really comes across in the book that you can see that you're an archivist. You know, there's a glossary in there and you even have this section that's 21 questions to document your food history that really prompts and encourages folks to think about this and their own food traditions and to kind of have this conversation while maybe eating these dishes. Are you kind of thinking that this is going to be a fad, that more people are going to have headstone recipes or more ways that are going to be existing that are documenting these food histories? What's kind of your hope and what are you seeing happen over time?
Yeah, I definitely hope that if the very least, if the only thing people take away from this is a good cookie recipe and talking with their loved ones about how they want to be remembered. And so, I mean, this project is very much about documenting and archiving personal food history. We all have that recipe we grew up with. Like for me, it was this yellow cake that my grandmother made. My dad makes really good jambalaya. Like I need to connect with my family members, document the recipe, cook it with them, because at some point we'll be losing that person and we still want to make their food. We want to pass that food tradition on, whatever it is. We all have different recipes.
Yeah.
And so while I started first posting, and even still to today, I got probably at this point received thousands of messages of people grieving a lost loved one and being like, I never got them to write this recipe down and I'm trying to recreate it and I wish I'd taken the time. And it's heartbreaking to hear about this because, like, you know, it's that thing of you lose a person, it's like losing a library.
Yeah.
And we don't want to have the conversations. In a lot of cases, death is taboo, it's scary, we don't want to suggest that we will all die someday, but you know, it's important to make that time. And so I hope that people will, I mean, whether they use these questions or not, as soon as they can, connecting with their family member or community member who knows their history, record it, document it. If a recipe comes out of it, cook it. Any sort of thing just to pass it forward, because it'll be lost if you don't do that.
Yeah. And a lot of those moments are just like slow moments you don't realize are the important ones, is cooking. Like I was thinking about, well, last time we spoke, I tried Kay's fudge and I didn't have your cookbook with all the extra tips and notes. So it didn't turn out that great. But this time I made Meemaw's no-bake cookies and I've shared them around the studio and everybody's seems to enjoy them. But they really reminded me of my grandma made these no-bake cornflake cookies and they had like peanut butter and butterscotch chips. And the best part that I kind of forgot about till I made these was that sometimes butterscotch chips would end up in the peanut butter jar for some reason, like when she made them. And so later I always loved to have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches at her house because sometimes there were butterscotch chips in the peanut butter. And so that was just like such a funny memory of my grandma that I think because of the way this book is situated and built, it really leaves space for you to think about things more deeply, which I think is so cool. Because a lot of times, like I said, these mundane moments in our lives aren't really what we think are going to be the big connections to the past.
Oh my gosh, I'm so obsessed with that. That is a way to elevate a peanut butter and jelly sandwich too. Go grandma.
I know. Well, and my mom was a hippie and my dad was a dentist, so I wasn't really around allowed sweets. So that was like just like so extra. I was like, there's a butterscotch chip in here.
Thanks, grandma.
Yay, grandma.
What a sweet memory too. Oh my gosh, that's so beautiful. Well, I'm so glad that Cindy's Cookies did that.
Yeah. And you know, it also made me think too, like so many of these moments are so personal and individual. Like if folks were in my family, if we were to say, what's grandma's recipe that you think is she's most famous for? I think we would all have a different recipe, which I think is really interesting because food can be so particularistic in the way that, you know, these relationships are formed too, which is also, you know, kind of cool.
Yeah, it's exactly that. And it is funny in some cases, like, so for the case of Cindy, she picked her own gravestone recipe. She's still alive and her husband were doing pre-planning. So it was something that she wanted to be remembered for. But in the case of some other family members, they had already passed away. The family was scratching their heads of like, how do we represent this person that we all gathered around their table and holidays were there and birthdays were there. And a recipe ended up being what was symbolized. And in some cases, it was hard to pick a recipe because they have so many memorable ones. So yeah, it isn't, it's a good question. Question of like, what do I want to be remembered for versus like, what does my community and loved ones remember me for?
Yeah, yeah. And just one thing. And, you know, a lot of them were grandparents in the book. And I think about what is it about grandparents that, you know, brings such an emotional response? Because there's, I don't know if you've heard about that restaurant in Staten Island where the chefs are like a rotating slate of grandmothers. And so you never know what you're going to get. I mean, I really want to go there too. So obviously, you know, we all want grandmas to cook for us. So why is that?
Yeah, I don't know. They make it with that special ingredient of love. And I don't, and there's something tangible, I swear. I can't figure out how to do it though.
Yeah. Anytime somebody tells me their grandma's make something, it's like, tell me what do they make? What do you love? Yeah, it's so cool. So
it really is.
I'm curious too, the anthropologist asking the archivist here. So what have you seen, like when you started with just a few and it grew, most of these are coming from the mid-2000s, you know, there's some demographic data, but what do you think you're learning about human behavior or the human experience through documenting, especially the gravestone? I know there's a whole humongous world of like funerary meals and the way we share food during grief, but the gravestone specifically, like what kind of thing do you think that this says about this moment in time?
Yeah, it's been interesting even just learning about like the history of the American cemetery through this. So, you know, we have the rural cemeteries in the beginning and during times when picnicking in cemeteries was celebrated and normal. And then, of course, we go through this whole period of taboo around death, which I feel like, you know, coming into 2019, it was don't talk about it. Don't, you know, hold your breath when you drive past a cemetery, like that whole thing. Which, you know, understandably, like death is scary, especially in Western traditions. And I would say that the gravestone recipe maybe is a little bit more of like personalization around death. The tools of creating a gravestone and a memorial marker have definitely changed. You know, we have like marble in the olden days, which is softer, it's easier to carve. And these days we have very heavy duty machinery that can be very personalized in how you make a gravestone. So like anything that is important to you can end up on your gravestone. And I noticed this in particular in the Midwest. I went to probably in the process of this project and book, maybe about 2000 cemeteries.
Wow.
It's been a lot. And so in particularly in the Midwest cemeteries, and you know, I should even say like I live next to Hollywood Forever in Los Angeles, so many different ways people chose to be memorialized. If you loved beagles, people might put a bunch of beagle statues on their gravestone. If you have a favorite quote, like, you know, David Lynch was just buried and he has the famous night blooming jasmine inscribed on his gravestone, which is like a very nostalgic smell for Los Angeles. And anything that might be important to you could end up on your stone. So I would definitely say there's a lot of personalization that's happening in part because of the tools have improved. But I would also hope that it's because we're maybe more engaged with this celebration of life. Like there's something very joyful about a recipe or something like a hobby showing up on a gravestone versus in the olden days, it was like mother, father, a spiritual quote, maybe like a skull and wings or something like that. And so, yeah, anyway, so death seems to be a lot more personalized. I would also wonder if the pandemic has also helped that along too, because I feel like for the first time in our generation, we were all aware of our immortality. Mm-hmm. We were all just much more aware of our, like we were having conversations daily about we will all die. And it was just, death was very present for all of us.
And so we all baked a lot of sourdough too.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Absolutely. All those things together. Yeah. Food and death were very present for all of us for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So I just find that very interesting timing with all of these other things.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, that wraps up this round of Underground History on the Jefferson Exchange. Rosie, thank you so much for joining us on the show again. The book is out in October. Be sure and pick up a copy at your favorite indie bookstore and let us know your gravestone recipes. And if anybody finds the Oregon one, you get a prize. I'm your host, Chelsea Rose. Our show producers are Natalie Golay and Charlie Zimmerman. You can find this episode and many more at Jeff Exchange or wherever you get your podcasts.